Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service, with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
Brought to you by Capital One, where you can open a savings account in about 5 minutes and earn five times the national average. Just imagine, five times more savings toward that overdue home addition, maybe even an addition on that addition. This is Banking Reimagined. What's in your wallet? Capital One, NA member FDIC.
Okay, Houston, we've had a problem here.
Disaster on a spacecraft 200,000 miles from home.
You've just had a big explosion and you don't know what caused it.
Confusion back on Earth.
Nothing made sense in those first few seconds.
And three astronauts in mortal peril.
We were not confident we were going to get the crew back.
It's going down. We're losing it.
The inside story of how NASA brought Apollo 13 back from the brink of catastrophe.
I remember walking back into the control center and put my headset on and said, guys, we got a plan.
13 Minutes to the Moon, Season 2.
We're going to be outside all known design and test boundaries of the spacecraft.
From the BBC World Service.
That's a brilliant maneuver, and he did it in about 30 milliseconds.
Search for 13 Minutes to the Moon, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Jeanette Jalil, and in the early hours of Wednesday, the 18th of March, these are our main stories. The governments in the United States and Britain have announced massive stimulus packages to bolster their economies in the face of the coronavirus pandemic. President Trump says it's important to save US businesses.
With this invisible enemy, we don't want airlines going out of business. We don't want people losing their jobs or not having money to live when they were doing very well just 4 weeks ago.
The European Union is banning most foreigners from entering its territory for 30 days, with exceptions for some countries like Britain and Switzerland. And the brother of the 2017 Manchester Arena bomber has been found guilty of 22 murders. The coronavirus outbreak is continuing to wreak havoc in the daily lives of millions of people, overburdening their health services and threatening many jobs and businesses. The question is not whether there'll be a recession worldwide, but for how long and how deep. On Tuesday, the governments in the United States and Britain announced massive stimulus packages to prevent their economies being destroyed by the coronavirus pandemic. The US package is estimated at $850 billion. The US Treasury Secretary, Steven Mnuchin, said the COVID-19 outbreak was worse for the airline industry than the 9/11 attacks.
We want to make sure Americans get money in their pockets quickly. We want to make sure small business owners have access to funds. We want to make sure that hotels, airlines, we have an entire package. We'll be laying out those details later today.
President Trump said the idea was to inject a large amount of money into the U.S. economy as quickly as possible.
I think we want to get it done and have a big infusion as opposed to going through little meetings every couple of days. We don't want to do it that way. We want to go big, go solid. The country is very strong. We've never been so strong, and that's what we're going to be doing. We don't want, with this invisible enemy, we don't want airlines going out of business. We don't want people losing their jobs or not having money to live when they were doing very well just 4 weeks ago.
The U.S. Vice President Mike Pence said the White House might have the U.S. military establish field hospitals in so-called virus hot zones if requested by state governors, or use the Army Corps of Engineers to add capacity to existing hospitals. I asked our correspondent, Aleem Makbul, about the scale of the U.S. financial package.
We're still, as you heard there from Steve Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, yet to hear the details of all of this. And of course, it does have to be presented to Congress and then passed. But he is talking about the possibility even of sending checks of $1,000 to Americans across the country, looking at underwriting billions of dollars in loans that could be made available to companies who are losing money right now, deferring tax payments, for example. Also, as you heard, he was talking about the coronavirus being worse for the airline industry than 9/11. So also looking at potentially bailout packages for the airlines, for hotels as well. So all of those things are up in the air. But just the announcement of those things did help the stock market to recover a touch after the terrible falls that we've seen in recent days. And there is a separate bill also being pushed through by Democrats to try and help individuals looking to have sick pay covered, because at the moment the US doesn't require companies to offer sick leave at all that is paid. And also that other bill, which is being discussed this week, is looking at providing free virus testing, because of course there are millions of people in this country who don't have health insurance.
Well, exactly. There are millions of people in the US who don't have health insurance, many more who also don't get sick pay, as you were saying. What was said about how the health system in the world's wealthiest country, how it's coping?
Well, I think in any country in the world, as we're discovering, that, you know, that there will be tremendous pressure on the hospitals, and particularly the discussion is being focused around New York, where the governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, has been saying that if, as experts in the US say, the peak of all of this could be in 45 days' time, he says experts were telling him that at that stage, hospitals in New York would need 110,000 beds for those being treated for coronavirus-linked illnesses. And that is something that at the moment New York doesn't have. And so, as you heard, President Trump saying at this news conference that the federal government was beginning the process of increasing hospital bed capacity in New York, and also potentially the building of field hospitals by the Army Corps of Engineers as well. Mike Pence also did urge, as you hear, construction companies to donate construction grade, so-called N95 masks, those masks to filter out particles, which can quite easily be used within hospitals, to donate those to local hospitals and stop any further orders. So, you know, extraordinary measures, as we keep hearing, but as the number of cases around the country continues to grow in spite of still very inadequate testing, and now we've got to the stage where 97 people have also died of the coronavirus here in the US.
James Botin is a senior fellow at the Center for International Governance Innovation. He was a long-time historian at the International Monetary Fund. Tim Franks asked him about these extraordinary public spending commitments.
If you had asked anyone even a week ago if they thought that the Trump administration might be talking about an aid package of $850 billion, I don't think anybody would have taken that very seriously. So it's quite clear that now many governments, including in the United States, are taking this very seriously and are prepared to take action. What still worries me is the issue of how targeted this package might be and how effective it might be. I don't find the idea of just sending checks to every American to be particularly helpful, because a lot of that money would go to people who don't really need it, people who aren't. A lot of people aren't spending simply because the stores are closing and it's not safe to go out. And giving them more money isn't going to get those people through. What we need to do is get a lot more money into the hands of people who are directly affected. So I think we'll find out a lot more over the next few days, but it'll be very important for whatever government programs are developed here and elsewhere for them to be as targeted as possible.
You do hear the argument, though, that, I mean, clearly it's pretty pointless to send check for a few thousand dollars if that's what you're going to do to a millionaire or a billionaire. But the whole point about this, and we heard this from Steve Mnuchin and other senior finance ministers around the world, is you need to act in haste. So in a sense, it's a very crude instrument, this idea of just trying to pump money willy-nilly into the system. But in a sense, it's better to be slightly indiscriminate than to be slow. That's the argument.
Yes, I think that's a persuasive argument, but it would, one could act just as quickly by pick an arbitrary number. Let's say eliminate the top 20% of the income earners in the United States from that proposal. So you're going to send out a check to every American who's in the bottom 80%, and that could be done almost as quickly. Identifying those people would take a few extra days, but if we're in a crisis mode, we should be able to make that kind of adjustment pretty quickly, and that would enable the government to send larger checks to the people who really need it.
James Boaten, a senior fellow at the Centre for International Governance Innovation. As we heard, the British government has announced its own huge programme to help the economy overcome the effects of the coronavirus pandemic. The Chancellor of the Exchequer, or Chief Finance Minister, Rishi Sunak, said the government would do whatever it took. He said, never in peacetime have we faced an economic fight like this one. The biggest element was about $400 billion of government loan guarantees to businesses hit by falling trade. That's 15% of GDP. Mr. Sunak was speaking at a press conference in Downing Street alongside the British Prime Minister, Boris Johnson. Our assistant political editor, Norman Smith, reports from Westminster.
24 hours after the government unveiled sweeping restrictions to curb the spread of coronavirus, it set out an equally dramatic emergency package to support the economy. At its heart is a £330 billion package of loan guarantees for struggling businesses. Cash that can be used to pay for stock, wages, rental and other business running costs. There'll be particular support for the travel and leisure industry. Mr. Sunak promised that all pubs, restaurants, theatres and the like with insurance policies for pandemics would be able to make claims for losses. He also promised those in the sector they would not have to pay business rates for 12 months. There'd also be specific support for airlines and airports, and there were suggestions the government could move to temporarily nationalise struggling rail firms. Mr. Sunak said coronavirus represented not just a health emergency, but also an economic emergency.
This national effort will be underpinned by government interventions in the economy on a scale unimaginable only a few weeks ago. This is not a time for ideology and orthodoxy. This is a time to be bold, a time for courage. I want to reassure every British citizen, this government will give you all the tools you need to get through this. We will support jobs. We will support incomes. We will support businesses. And we will help you protect your loved ones. We will do whatever it takes.
There will also be help for individuals with the promise of a three-month mortgage holiday for those financially affected. The Chancellor said he would also work with the TUC, who've called for wage subsidies, to put in place further employment support to protect jobs. Meanwhile, the Prime Minister defended his decision to dramatically increase the restrictions and precautions in place to curb the outbreak. Mr. Johnson said without them, the NHS would not have been able to cope.
Every country in the world has the same problem. This is a disease that is so dangerous and so infectious that without drastic measures to check its progress, it would overwhelm any health system in the world.
Although much of the detail, particularly in relation to jobs and pay, has still to be worked out, it's clear the government is preparing to go much further, as seems likely, is necessary.
Norman Smith in Westminster. Now let's go to the streets of some of Europe's capitals as more countries close their borders and impose lockdowns in the battle against the coronavirus. First to Paris and our correspondent, Lucy Williamson.
Paris today is a strange kind of place. It's getting on for rush hour here and I can see a few people milling around, but really hardly anyone at all. It's a few hours since the new quarantine rules came into effect here, and already I've seen police out and about stopping people in the street, asking them where they're going, what they're doing. For a long time, it seemed as if normality was the chosen defence of many people here in France. Now the new rules are in place, anxiety here has suddenly spiralled, and the silence here today is eerie.
This is Jenny Hill in a quiet central Berlin. Very few of the workers you'd normally see scurrying about. Bad news for local cafes. They're allowed to stay open, but they're empty. The ladies at the Persian place who sold me lunch today said they'd probably close tomorrow. The government wants people to stay at home if possible. It's told them not to travel on holiday in Germany or abroad. Schools, businesses, bars, gyms, theatres are closed. It's hoped a complete lockdown won't be necessary, but the number of cases is rising fast. Today, the official risk level went from medium to high, and the experts continue to tell us that the worst of the outbreak is yet to come.
This is Kevin Connolly in a Brussels which has quickly slipped into the economic rhythms you'd expect from a permanent public holiday. My daily walk to work takes me along the Rue Stévin here, where the European Commission building is surrounded by nearly carless streets and empty walkways. Briefings today have been done by teleconference, with officials on laptops in their homes. A couple of restaurants, a burger bar and an Indian, are trying to keep going by offering takeaway services, as the Belgian regulations allow. But those regulations are tightening. Even food shops now are only allowed to have one customer for every 10 square metres. Until there's room for you inside, you wait outside. And bars, cafes and all the other restaurants around here are simply closed. The local pharmacy alone is open, but it has no hand sanitizer. Privately, everyone asks how long this can be sustained. But publicly, people are generally doing the right thing.
Kevin Connolly in Brussels. The pandemic is not only making an impact on the political, social and economic lives of millions of people, their spiritual lives are also being curtailed everywhere. The authorities in Saudi Arabia have banned people from gathering in mosques to perform the five daily prayers as the country battles to contain coronavirus infections. The only exceptions will be the two main mosques in the cities of Mecca and Medina, the holiest places in Islam. The Vatican has announced that there will be no gathering of worshippers in St. Peter's Square on Easter Sunday. Pope Francis is delivering homilies only via video link. Our religion editor, Martin Bashir, reports.
Cari fratelli e sorelle, buongiorno.
Pope Francis delivering his Sunday homily from within the Basilica, standing alone at a lectern, accompanied only by a microphone, addressing a single camera. In these unprecedented circumstances, all services during Holy Week will be broadcast live by the Vatican's own television station, but without any members of the public being present. It is a dramatic contrast to last Easter Sunday, when more than 110,000 people received Holy Communion in St. Peter's Square. So what of the church in this country?
We have a single common structure of advice that goes to every bishop and to every parish.
Cardinal Vincent Nicholls is the leader of the Catholic Church in England and Wales.
If we here in this country are asked to close churches for the celebration of Mass, I will say, yes, people should not come to Mass, but yes, the churches should remain open so that people can go and pray. And yes, I will ask priests to continue to celebrate Mass, even if they do it on their own.
Coronavirus does not discriminate. In Jerusalem, the entire Al-Aqsa compound, which contains the historic Dome of the Rock Mosque, has been closed until further notice, and Muslims have been forced to pray outside its bolted doors. The Hajj pilgrimage to Mecca, which attracts over 2 million visitors to Saudi Arabia, is also now in jeopardy.
Hajj is a central pillar of Islam. It's one of the five pillars, and Muslims throughout the world, you know, from a very early age, they long to go to Kaaba in Mecca.
Qari Asim, an imam in Leeds, says that while Muslims are commanded to make the pilgrimage to Mecca, they should not do so if it endangers the lives of others.
As a person of faith, you know, I believe that my God wants me to not only protect my own self, but also protect the lives of others. And if that means postponing a particular obligation due to circumstances beyond my control, then I am following the message of God, you know, by not performing that particular religious obligation.
Back at Westminster Cathedral in London, Cardinal Vincent Nicholls is preparing for the closure of churches and says that the coronavirus may yet present an opportunity for Christians to put their faith into practice.
This challenge coming in Lent, when we day by day try to do something that puts others first, it's quite a nice challenge for us to get beyond the self-centred view of life into something that says, you know, actually, we depend on each other, we belong to each other, we have to take care of each other. It's like love your neighbour, as simple as that.
Cardinal Vincent Nichols ending that report by Martin Bashir. Also in the podcast,
Chinese officials have been reassuring the public that the virus cluster which has caused pneumonia in Wuhan is under control. There have been deaths, but the authorities say only dozens of people have been infected.
It was only 2 months ago that our Beijing correspondent Stephen McDonnell first reported on a mysterious illness that had killed two people in the city of Wuhan. We find out how it is in Wuhan today. The coronavirus outbreak has brought a small piece of good news for the British-Iranian woman Nazanin Zaghari Ratcliffe, who's been imprisoned for nearly 4 years. She's been temporarily released, along with tens of thousands of other prisoners, as Tehran struggles to deal with the outbreak. This follows weeks of family and diplomatic pressure on the Iranian authorities to accept that she was in a vulnerable position in jail because of fears the virus was sweeping through Iran's prison system. Puria Jaferi from BBC Persian has been following developments.
The situation in the jails of Iran and the prisons were not good. There was a lot of pressure from the families of the prisoners on the government that they need to take action. If coronavirus breaks in the prison, what is going to happen there? And I think the main issue would have been the political prisoners, because in terms of other prisoners, obviously 85,000 have been released, which is unprecedented in the history of the Islamic Republic of Iran. But the most important is how they have dealt with the political prisoners. The most high-profile of them, Nazanin Zaghari Ratcliffe, the Iranian-British woman who was sentenced to 5 years in jail. Now she's been temporarily released for 2 weeks, having an electronic tag attached to one of her legs. So we don't know. It might have been that this was corona-related. Others are saying this is related to the ongoing negotiations between the British government and the Iranian government. The UK Foreign Secretary, Dominic Raab, has welcomed the action taken by the Iranians. And only a couple of days ago, we had this quote from the Iranian ambassador to the UK saying a new chapter in the case of Nazanin Zaghari Ratcliffe has been opened. So this is one of the more positive news coming out of this corona crisis.
Puria Jaferi from BBC Persian. In Kenya, banks and mobile money service providers are waiving charges on cashless payments to make them more attractive than handling hard cash. Kenyans make about 150 million mobile payments every month. The hope is that by limiting the use of physical cash, it can reduce transference of the coronavirus on paper money. Bola Mosuro asked the BBC's Ferdinand Omondi in Nairobi, how will this all work in practice?
Mobile transactions in Kenya are very convenient. People use it to pay groceries, some use it to pay school fees, I pay my rent with it. So nearly every transaction you can do from, a dollar to about $100 or even $500, it can be made via mobile money. But when they are frequent, they are very expensive. And so some people have been resorting to cash, particularly those in the low-income areas, to save on the charges. But now the central bank has met with these financial institutions and the public service payment apps and told them, look, you need to change this to encourage guys to go cashless. So providers like M-Pesa, which is the largest, has announced that it will not be charging for transactions of up to $10. So you can buy your milk, your bread, and go to work and come back without getting any charges. Banks have joined in.
You're saying going to work, but does that mean on a matatu you can do it in a cashless way? Surely not.
Yes, there are those who have been doing payments in matatu. It's not very encouraged before, because previously, matatu owners or operators did not want to accept M-Pesa because of the transaction. So let's say if you're paying 50 shillings, which is about 5 Kenyan cents, they will still have to pay money to withdraw that cash. But now, since paying and withdrawal is free, then the expectation is that even in the matatus now, they will be able to accept more transactions. So this is how the government expects this to work.
Ferdinand Omondi in Kenya. Here on the BBC World Service, we've been asking listeners from around the world to send in their questions on coronavirus via WhatsApp. Chloe Tilley asked the BBC's science correspondent, Palab Ghosh, to listen and reply to the comments.
Hi, my name is Irani Lamte, calling from Ghana. My question is, what is coronavirus? What can I do to prevent it? Why do I use sanitizer for my hands but not my body?
So, simple question, what is coronavirus? How do you prevent it? And why use hand sanitizer for hands but not all of your body?
So coronavirus is a virus that passes disease just like the it's similar to the cold and flu, but it's totally different to the planet. Viruses mutate, they change forms, and this means that our body's immune system can't cope with it, which is why so many people are getting infected with it. Now, the reason that you put hand sanitizer and hopefully washing your hands quite a lot is that that is one of the means by which it's transmitted. There are two ways. One is through coughing and being too close to someone who coughs. The other way is that it's got onto someone's hands, maybe because they've coughed onto their hands. So if you wash your hands, which is better than hand sanitizer, but also use hand sanitizer on your hands, that does offer a considerable degree of protection.
Fantastic. Let's have another question.
Hello, BBC Voice. This is Noel Ryan from Brenta, Malawi. I just want to know, we know and we heard that the coronavirus was traced back to an animal that was a carrier. So at this point in time, is it possible that other animals are also carriers and they are infectious? Thank you.
So the coronavirus traced back to an animal, does it mean other animals will be carriers and can be infectious?
Probably not. I think the background to it is that, as I said, viruses always mutate and quite often they jump species, which is what happened in this instance. It changes into a form that's harmful and infectious to humans. And so at the moment, this particular strain is being spread from human to human.
Great. Let's have another listen to another question.
Hello. Good afternoon. This is Mohamed Lamine Yansane. Can the COVID-19 be transmitted through insects?
Simple question.
It's a simple question. The simple answer is no.
OK, this is a question about over 65s.
Hello, this is Carol from the US, and I was wondering if the pneumonia shot helps people over 65.
I assume she means whether it's going to help against COVID-19. There's no evidence that it'll give you any additional protection compared with someone who doesn't. Anyone over 60, indeed, should take particular care over mixing and socialising, taking precautions, because the evidence so far is that the over 60s and the older you get are more at risk of having more serious symptoms.
The BBC's science correspondent, Palab Ghosh. Now to other news. The brother of an Islamist extremist who blew himself up at a pop concert in Manchester in northern England has been found guilty of murder. Hashem Abedi refused to attend court in London to hear the verdict. 22 people were killed, the youngest just 8, at an Ariana Grande concert in 2017. The prosecutor said the 22-year-old was just as guilty as his brother, Salman Abedi, the suicide bomber. Dominic Casciani reports.
After a 7-week-long trial, the jury took less than 5 hours to find Abedi guilty of an English criminal record of 22 murders. There was silence as the foreman delivered the verdicts, from the killing of John Atkinson, a Manchester special needs support worker, through 10 children and teenagers, to Blackpool school receptionist Jane Tweddle. A handful of families in court held each other as they burst into tears. Others were watching live from Manchester, Glasgow, Newcastle and Leeds. Abedi was nowhere to be seen. Last week he refused to cooperate with the trial after the forensic evidence proving his role in preparing the bomb became apparent.
Dominic Casciani. Chad is repaying a $100 million debt to Angola by handing over vast numbers of cattle. Angola is expected to receive 75,000 cattle over the next 10 years. Will Ross reports.
According to the state-run Journal de Angola, more than 1,000 head of cattle have now arrived in the capital, Luanda. By the end of the month, 4,500 will have been taken there by ship. This certainly is a novel way to deal with a debt. At around $1,300 per animal, the cattle will keep heading south for the next 10 years. But this arrangement suits both countries. Chad is short of cash and rich in cattle, whilst Angola, Africa's second largest oil producer, needs to restock. It's struggling with the legacy of a civil war and severe droughts.
Will Ross. Now back to our main story, the coronavirus outbreak. It may be hard to believe, but it was only 2 months ago that our Beijing correspondent Stephen McDonnell filed his first report on a mysterious illness that had killed two people in the city of Wuhan.
Chinese officials have been reassuring the public that the virus cluster which has caused pneumonia in Wuhan is under control. There have been deaths, but the authorities say only dozens of people have been infected. However, scientists in Britain have estimated that the true number of cases could already be at least 1,700.
Since then, China, the worst affected country, has reported more than 80,000 cases. Of those, more than 3,000 have resulted in death. But after weeks of draconian quarantine measures, on Tuesday it reported just one domestic case. Here's Stephen McDonnell again.
Well, I hope I'm not going to regret saying this, but I think people can look to China and see that there will be light at the end of the tunnel. I mean, where we are now, unless things change drastically, is where everyone else is going to get to as well. So a few months probably of people being infected, of having to stay at home, of not being able to go to the football, and sadly some people dying and being sick. But we will, as a sort of global community, get through this. It just shows, though, how quickly this virus has been able to devastate global economies. It's really virulent. I mean, people, it's easy to be caught. It can be deadly. And yet it also can be contained because, you know, look at China. More than 80,000 infections a couple of weeks ago. That's dropped down now to less than 10,000 active infections. Today, according to official figures, China added only one homegrown extra infection in the whole country. That was in Wuhan. The other sort of 20 or so extra infections have come in the form of people travelling in from overseas. Now, I know people will say the figures can't possibly be right here. They can't catch all the cases. There could be some underreporting, and there probably is all of that. But let's assume that the broad sweep of it is accurate. What seems to be the case now is that the authorities here are really worried that, say, for example, Chinese people returning from North America, returning from Europe, will come here believing this is now the safe place to be. They'll bring the coronavirus with them and it could explode again. So that's why there are now very tough extra provisions at airports, but you're going to have to go into quarantine if you return to major cities in China. So they're not sort of telling everybody it's all going to be okay quite just yet.
Stephen McDonnell. And that's all from us for now, but there will be an updated version of the Global News podcast later. If you want to comment on this podcast or the topics covered in it, you can send us an email. The address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. I'm Janat Jalil. Until next time, goodbye.
If you're paying attention to the headlines, you've heard about ransomware, a computer virus that locks your files until you pay a ransom. But did you know that more and more businesses are under attack? The key to stopping ransomware is protecting yourself before you're attacked. With Carbonite, if your business becomes infected, you can recover clean files from their super secure servers. Best of all, you don't have to remember to upload files. Carbonite does it automatically. Try it free at carbonite.com/podcasts and receive 2 free months if you buy.